Come aboard, you people. Starship Rocontra with Anna DeBlantis live from
the studio.
Studio A here at the WGN Broadcast Complex.
Initially going to be at the Sox game, but that's been postponed for tomorrow. We'll be out there at the rate.
Right, we'll be at the rate and then back here in the studio at the end of the game. Because we go right to the last Blackhawks home game. And we were at the second to last Blackhawks home game last night. And we apparently broke Lauren Lapka at the game.
She had a good run.
Yep.
She went out with us after. And if you know, if you roll with Rokan, there's a little bit of an after-after, and then an after-after-after-after.
Yeah, it was a long night.
I feel like we lived at the United Center this season. I'm going to miss it.
I know. Anna and I were saying that when we were walking out of there last night.
Bummer.
It was like, it's like, I'm really going to miss being there.
I might go tomorrow.
You know, if you're a Hawks fan, and those people who are there every night, man, those 19,000 people.
The best. Loyal.
The best. But they, you know, it's been a wild and emotional ride this season.
No question. Roller coaster.
And not a happy ending to this season, but there's hope for next year, and there's this sense of just the fraternity of being there and watching that game, cheering your guys on. And last night, there was I don't want to get too Sox geeky here, or Hawks geeky here, because we got a lot of stuff to get to today, but last night when the Esposito brothers took the ice for one more shift. I'll get that right eventually. They've only been doing it for 5 years. When they took the ice, and Tony Esposito wore the old molded goalie mask.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. You look like Freddy Krueger.
He did.
I was, you know, there were tears in my eyes, because it's like there's such a generational thing. I think only baseball, to some degree football, but football changes so much. And sometimes you wonder, you wonder if your parents have passed, you wonder, what would your dad really think about today's NFL? But hockey is very similar, and baseball is very similar. And it's hard to kind of put into words how emotional those kinds of moments are, where you connect the generations like that, as they did last night at the United Center.
Beautiful moment to see them out in the ice.
We'd like to have seen a lot more wins this year, but it was certainly a beautiful night. And listen, we're going to have the Hawks summer extravaganza in July, and then it all starts again in September for us. So see you in September. Oh my God,
I know.
Almost as upset as I was at the end of A Star Is Born.
It reminds you of that. Well, the season being over, you know, this January, there weren't high hopes, but they turned things around, and it was just like, wow, you thought this team, if they did make it to the postseason, watch out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch out.
Yeah. Well,
bummer.
Yeah, they won last night in a shootout. That was good. All right. And, you know, you make friends out there, right? Because you got friends, you got seatmates and other people that you get to know through the games, guys who go have a drink with at a bar or whatever in between periods. And it's like, and you're like, we'll see you until September. I mean, you could make plans, but you just never do.
You don't.
That's how it goes. So.
But it's always great to be out at the Hawks.
Yeah.
And, we're gonna miss you,
especially my bartenders, Gail and Kelly. If I could just
Gail will miss you.
Thank Gail and Kelly, my bartenders. I would, and I have two personal bartenders.
I like you do, and I like how you order. It's just sort of like hand signals. There's no actual communication, and then she just like and she touches her ear and she looks at you and with one eye, and then I'm like, what are you doing? And then all of a sudden, I have a drink and she has a drink and everything's done, and Gail just. She speaks
That's
your language.
So true, because I've sort of adopted the language from Rowan. Last night, I from 20 feet away, I signaled Kelly, and next thing I know, I had a drink in my hand.
And it's the right drink.
Great. It's the right drink, yes.
Just got yeah.
And shout out to Wally.
Got to hang out with
him. Hey, Wally.
Because he watches this every day, he said.
Shout out to Wally. Anyway, we love you. We love you, Chicago Blackhawks organization. And we didn't get a chance to thank all of them last night as we were leaving. But, you know, from the very top on down, from Rocky Wirtz, who we did get a chance to say goodbye to last night and you know, hug. And he goes, you're coming Friday, right? And I'm like, Kevin, I got to go. But there was, to John McDonough, to Jay Blunk, to Pete Hassan, to all the people all the way up and down the line there. They're just amazing folks. And it's going to be fun. They're fun no matter what. And it's just great to wear the red and the black when you're out there. All right. coming up. Listen to this. We're going to find out. We're awaiting the final, I think, I'm just looking at you now. Did they get the DNA? Is it not match
yet? Okay. Not yet. Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking to me.
No. Well, anybody can answer that. We're waiting to see if this 14-year-old boy that has been identified in Cincinnati as a potentially boy missing here for 7 years. Family's been looking for him. Amazing, amazing story. We're going to get the latest on that coming up in just a moment. Dr. Willie Wilson is here, Kingmaker. He is the, in this case, Queenmaker, but he's a Kingmaker. And he, and the irony is he's not, he would be a Burger Kingmaker, except he's from the McDonald's organization.
Yeah, separate.
We'll also talk to, you know, the a Chicago law firm is handling the 737 MAX situation here in terms of the lawsuits. We're going to talk to the lead lawyer on that. Why are they involved in these international crashes? And what does this mean for Boeing? What does this mean for the 737 MAX? What does this mean for the families? There's a family here that lost their daughter and sister in the Ethiopian crash.
Unbelievable story. So heartbreaking.
Horrifying story.
Yeah.
They can't bring anything home to remember her. It's a... So we'll tell you that story. And what does this really mean, you know, for people who are flying, right? And what does this mean for Boeing? And Boeing is a Chicago company. I mean, how does this... Because it does look like... And there may be some questions as well about the FAA and some the new regulations, the post-2017 regulations of where the airline manufacturers got to guard their own hen house. And that's a big, there's a big question there. And then if you live in the western suburbs, you know this story. It's coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, so come back if you can't be here for the moment. The Ripper Crew murders from the 1980s. Well, one of the four who were convicted of as many as 17 murders of women. One man was shot during this whole crime spree. But 17 murders, almost all of them sexual, satanic murders with women with horrifying things happening during the murder. And one of those guys has been released from prison and one was executed. But the guy who was executed, his brother, has been released from prison and has now moved to the western suburbs. And there is a huge issue with that. We're going to introduce you. If you're not familiar with this story, we're going to tell you exactly what this is. Because it's one of the most infamous cases in Chicago history.
Yeah.
And it is related in the craziest way to John Wayne Gacy. We all know the John Wayne Gacy story. But this is the mastermind behind this worked for Gacy. It's crazy. Wait till you hear a story that's coming your way at 6 o'clock right here. All right. In the meantime, Kim, tell us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Road time is ticking for actor Jesse Smollett to reimburse the city for the cost to investigate his alleged attack.
Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis, yes. Right here, 720 WGN. How's that going for you?
It's going great.
All right. Now, I would like to tell you, coming up, Mr. Richard Roper will be here to review Shazam.
Oh, I love that back in the day.
Yeah. Well, they've made it into kind of a kitsch superhero film.
Mm-hmm.
So along the lines of Deadpool.
Oh.
But a little, in that vein. The guy from Chuck. The Zachary Levi, who's also in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Mm-hmm.
Greatest show on television!
Other than When the Star is Born is on, and you can watch that.
Right. I don't know what to say. But anyway, that's where all of this is, kind of coming together for us. All right, are we going to talk to, I need to know what we're doing here. I thought we were going to Mr. Burrow. All right.
Okay. Burrow's still doing a hit. That's what I heard. I'm not sure how to interpret
people,
that.
People, I just need to hear these things. I know that we weren't supposed to be here for today's show, but we are here anyway. All right. I don't know what's going on.
Well, this afternoon we should learn more about that DNA from the the teenage boy that was found, whether or not he is the missing Aurora boy, Timothy Pitson. And I think it is such an emotional story. I mean,
can you believe this, though?
No.
So his family has been looking for him for this time, for these 7 years. And, you know, imagine how much hope one loses over 7 years. The kid went missing at a water park, right? Isn't that the story?
I think, was it the
at
water
a hotel?
Park?
Well, he went on a 3-day trip with his mom to the Dells and some other places, but her body was discovered later at a hotel.
And
she
he
had
was
taken
gone.
Her own life.
And he was gone.
But
yes.
She left those notes behind stating that her son was safe but would never be found. Very cryptic, very mysterious, and it's true, at least for 7 years, and we don't know if this is him, that he has not been found. And the father has said he didn't understand it because, you know, he even though the boy was, what, 6 when he went missing, he had gone through with him, you know, here's how to call 911. Here's your address. Here's information. Here's what you do. And he said, I always felt every day I would look at my phone thinking that maybe he'd call. Maybe something would happen.
The one issue with this story is I never got the sense of whether the family felt that he had been taken by other people who would be taking care of him, or if this was a murder kidnapping or what. You know, there's so many unanswered questions at this point. But what we do know is that this young man, apparently now 14.
Mm-hmm.
Was walking in a daze, right?
He said he looked nervous. He was described as standoffish, that something wasn't right. Someone described he had bruises on him and that he just wasn't acting right. And that, you know, he seemed to really make an impression in that way to a couple of the witnesses who've been interviewed that there's something about this boy. And, you know, sure enough, he said, you know, I've been kidnapped, and he reported it to somebody, and this is how he made his way into the system. He said his name.
Who would make that up, right?
It seems
unlikely that this is not this child, but we'll just have to wait for authorities. But there are details in this that are still, so gigantic holes in this story.
Huge holes.
So if he were gone for this period of time, how would he... who was he with?
Where has he
what
been?
What did they know about this? How were they involved in any way? And the death of the mother, what was that ruled?
She, well, they think that she had taken her own life, Kim. Is that, I mean, this
that
is how it was
it
reported.
Was, yes,
it was ruled as a suicide.
Yes. But now there's so many questions.
There are, indeed, because you think she wrote these letters, he'll never be found, or he's safe, don't bother looking for him. These are the notes she left. It makes you wonder, well, what happened?
All right.
And so many questions in this DNA test could certainly prove that the biggest question, is this him?
All right. More of this coming your way today as soon as we get any information on this. And then I just stop for a second and imagine this, though. Imagine the father who 7 years ago lost his child.
Right. Dropped him off at school that morning. Mom picked him up. That was last time he saw him. Said, I love you, Dad. I love you, too.
And then it disappeared, and you think you're never going to see this child again. And now you get a phone call. I mean, I just cannot imagine what that is like. All right, Ryan Burroughs just stepped into the studio. And, Ryan, we're still awaiting the DNA on this. We don't have an answer, right?
Yeah, nothing quite yet. We know that Louisville FBI, Cincinnati FBI, Aurora Police are down there as well. And we got a note from the Aurora Police early this morning, said they didn't have anything new. They were hoping to learn something either this afternoon or early evening. And, you know, at that point, hopefully they'll pass that along to us.
Do we have a sense from the family yet? Is the father remarried? What do we know about that?
We don't know much about the family, actually. And a lot of what we've been getting is from the grandmother who's been here in the Aurora area. And she said that they're just kind of waiting by the phone. Obviously, you don't want to reconnect this child with someone if it's not him. So
You also don't want to get your hopes up in case, right?
And they have had 2 or 3 cases over the last 7-8 years where there have been reports of this child. They've been gotten phone calls that maybe we know where he is. And they've obviously not been fruitful. So, you know,
a nightmare of that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's absolutely, astounding.
Well, and they need to make sure, if indeed this is Timothy, that he's safe too. I mean, if there are two guys out there looking for him for any reason, you know, obviously that's a concern.
And why would that be?
Well, no, I'm just saying that, you know, if he was being held for some reason, you know, obviously they're trying to find who these two men are who Timothy says, or who this person who says he's Timothy says he was with. They're trying to find these people as well.
Yeah, he said he escaped two kidnappers, I believe with his words. That's how it's being reported through authorities, and that he ran across a bridge, and that some witnesses said looked like he had been running forever and just looked so disturbed, so distraught. And I guess identified himself as Timothy, used that name, right, Ryan?
He did. I mean, I couldn't imagine a 14-year-old identifying himself with that name if he was not aware of that story. Right. It seems very, very strange. I mean, when we say if it's not him, but that would take some research to know if that's not actually him.
Especially since that case has not been prominent in the media for a while. Mm-hmm. If it had been in the media recently and kids all over the country heard that name, maybe, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it would take a total... sort of a fantastic ability to create something with this young man if it were not him, right? I mean, just think about what would go into that. But this idea that if this is in fact this kid, that he has been laying in wait to escape and took his opportunity. And, you know, we've seen that. We just recently saw this in the last year.
Jamie Kloss.
Right.
Yeah.
Of, you know, wait, you know, there and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and then finally able to get her shot. And in this case, maybe his shot to do it. It's just, you cannot imagine.
Well, it's haunting, too, to think of this. Even if this boy isn't Timothy, it certainly seems as if he has a bad story to tell.
I mean, I've got kids right now in that age from 6 to 14. I mean, I couldn't imagine them being in captivity for 8 years. That's insane.
Away from family.
We're expecting any minute now that we're going to get some sort of notification from authorities down in Southeast Ohio. So we'll find out. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Appreciate it, Ryan Burrow. Let's check in with Kim Gordon, coming your way in 2 minutes. It's the Rokoncha with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WTN.
One of our favorite people just entered the studio.
Yep, he is Dr. Willie Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
He is the Burger King maker. See what I just did right there?
Except it's McDonald's.
No, and it's Queens that he just made. A Queen he just made.
Right.
All right, close. So Willie Wilson, of course, ran for mayor, did very, very well in the primary, as we're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
But didn't make the final two. It was close, though. And I told you, I was predicting you, and I was predicting you'd make the final two. But when it came down to it, then in those days afterwards, a lot of people, more people were courting your opinion about this than any of the other candidates or any of the other people who are perceived to be very influential in this town in terms of things like getting people elected.
Right.
And so you said you were going to keep your powder dry. You took a week to think about it. You put a poll out. You went to different community, we like to call them now stakeholders in this, talked to them about what their thoughts were. And you came out and you said that you were going to endorse Lori Lightfoot, and then she wins by basically 50 points. How much credit do you get for that?
Well, I don't know. I have to say that I may have had at least 1 or 2%.
I think so, yeah.
Look at him. Look at him.
Yeah, 1 or 2%.
Yes.
Was it close for you? Because I know you met with both candidates and we were anticipating who you were going to endorse. I thought all along it was Lori. There was no way, no how, because I know you were critical of Tony Preckwinkle and some of her policies when you were running yourself. Was there ever a moment when you thought you picked the wrong person?
No, not at all. Not at all. She was the best person. If you need change in the city, you have to have something different.
Can I stop you for just 1 second? This is an unbelievable turn. What has just happened? Ryan Burrow is stepping into the studio here. We're just being told now that the DNA has come back in that situation in Cincinnati with that young boy who's claiming to be the missing boy from Aurora. And
What I'm seeing right now is the FBI confirms the child found is not missing child Timothy Pitson.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the note we're getting. FBI Louisville, FBI Cincinnati, Aurora Police Department, Newport Police Department have been conducting an investigation. DNA results have been returned, indicating that the person in question is not Timothy Pitson.
Oh, wow.
The local investigation continues into this person's true identity. community. A special thanks to Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Northern Kentucky Children's Advocacy Center for
their
assistance.
What a shock.
So here's a kid, a 14-year-old boy, who said, I've been kidnapped and I've been held for 7 years, and he says the name, Timothy Spitzen, right? He identifies himself as that missing person.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's not him.
Yeah. All right. More on that at the top of the hour. Thank you very much, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Back to that's a wild story. We'll get more details on that and get to it. All right. So here we are back in Chicago. Lori Lightfoot is mayor. What would you like to do or see here from her? Would you like a role in what she's going to do here? A formal role?
No.
An informal role.
Look, I like to be, if she would want me to be, and it's maybe some type of advisor, but no paid job, nothing like that. I don't want a job.
Okay.
Because I want to just be able to represent the community that, voted for me and their views. She's mayor, and so let her be mayor. And I'm here to support her when she's right, and when she's wrong, I'm here to add my little 2 cents in or 1 cent in.
Let's talk about the business community. There are a lot of people very concerned in the business community, are there not, about how we're going to pay for this party. Obviously, there's $300 million that's due very soon.
Right.
There's another $1.5 billion that they're going to have to come up with over the next 18 months. What do... business people are afraid that the taxes are going to get crazy. This transfer tax we're talking about in real estate. I mean, how are you? Will you have a voice on that?
I don't know, but I tell you, if I'm asked, I will give my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I have not talked to Mayor-elect Lightfoot since the election night.
Okay,
I know she's been busy downstate, everything else. Mm-hmm. But if I'm asked, as related to business, I would certainly put my 2 cents in. I'm not for taxes. I think when you add taxes, you run people, businesses, as well as community people out of the community and out of the city of Chicago.
Right.
So we know that don't work. Yeah. But in order to deal with the tax, I still believe it this way. I believe out of $10 billion budget, $7 billion in payroll is too high. I think you got $2 billion worth of overtime. You look at the corruption. I think you got to dig in that corruption.
Yeah, there's a corruption tax in this town. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and you got to bid contracts out to make sure it's equally and fairly with everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You got to get business people involved, But you got to find ways of getting taxes down, not increasing them, because once you get them down, people come, in Chicago.
So you don't support the graduated income tax that she says she does and our governor says he does as well. This graduated income tax where you're going to lean more on people making upper middle class and beyond.
I don't agree with that. I think that when you put taxes on people who work hard all their life, it is wrong. I think let them make as much as they want to, because you're going to have to hire more people. That make good sense to me, all right? Mm-hmm. But to put taxes on somebody that because they made it, let's find a way to lower taxes, get those people whose small businesses and those people who want to get into business, let's help that way. Let's focus on our local business. Let's focus on international business. If Indiana can do it, Tennessee and Texas can have a surplus of dollars, and we're the Midwest, come on.
Yeah. They don't have the same social in terms of social security, I'm using that with the little S's, network that big city states have. Now, Texas to some degree has it, but Indiana doesn't have it because Indiana doesn't have that gigantic population. Chicago has it because you've got a very large urban center here, right? And you got a lot of poor people in an urban center, right? Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of burnout here in terms of in the last 100 years from the great industrial revolution of Chicago in the 1900s, 20s, 30s, and 40s to where we sit now. So what do we do to pay for that?
Well, look, I think communicating with the citizen, working together, I think we got to deal with the union. Look, you got to come to the table and work the thing out together.
Mm-hmm.
and you got to work it out that it makes sense. You know, it can look. Everybody knows that the union plays a big part.
Right.
Right.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. I mean, I think it's very easy. It's become the union. People's response to unions is very binary. There are people who go, unions absolutely the worst, and unions are absolutely the best. And no matter what the union asks for, it's okay. And then no matter what the union does, it's not okay, depending on which side you're on. And neither of those things are true. There have been unions that have gotten too greedy. There are businesses that would not take care of their people were it not for the unions that represent them.
Look. Let's put it this way. They're good and bad on both sides.
Right. So there is a way of negotiating. There are thoughtful ways of negotiating some of these things. And in terms of public sector unions, what's really funny is it's very easy to politicize in the public sector union because you're dealing with public employees, right? So you can, and both sides can get vilified. The union can get vilified. The employees can get vilified. And then the government that's not, you know, paying them properly can get vilified as it's perceived. You see this with the teachers union. Teachers union's about to go through an election themselves, right? And
yeah.
This is a
contract's up.
This is a pretty big loss, we could say, that Tony Preckwinkle lost by, let's just round it up, 50 percentage points.
I said
you said 40. I said 2-1. I'm closer. All right, here's the thing. 50, so that's a big deal because I think, and when Lori Lightfoot said in her acceptance speech on Tuesday night, I want to thank all the teachers who voted for me. What signal is she sending right there?
Well, look, let's put it this way. If it had been the other way around, then what's what? All right?
Right. But it wasn't.
That's fine. But see, look, union, there are some good unions, and there are some not so good. There are some good business. There are some not so good.
Right.
All right? So I'm saying bring us all together.
Okay.
And work the thing out for the benefit of the whole city of Chicago. And I'm saying the corruption, get rid of that. I'm saying that the budget, you cannot run a business with 75% or 7% is in payroll.
You're a businessman and a budget man. What percentage would you say of our budget could be eliminated through eliminating corruption? Doable.
You know what? With Chicago, who knows?
Well, you're never going to eliminate corruption completely.
Well, but the doable part of it all, I mean, the areas that you would hit if you were mayor, I mean, what percentage do you think you could actually save?
You probably could save, you know what, I would say probably 25%. I would say that because, it's very high. But see, like when we do business, we bid out to everybody. Everybody comes in, give their prices, we get them down. Each quarterly or each 6 months, you got to come back and bring some extra added value, find new ways of cutting things to get it down. You don't let taxes get so high and run us out.
Yeah.
You don't run the citizen out.
Right.
Right?
That's a big deal. Yeah.
That is a big deal.
So I would get it down to that. I'm talking stuff that we have done.
Yeah. Do you... I know it's going to sound like a loaded question, but it's not because I truly believe this about you, that I think leadership, there's a lot of self-appointed leaders in Chicago who are, you know, civilians. They're not in elected positions, but they've been out there, whether they're religious leaders or community organizers or whatever it happens to be. And it does seem to me that in Chicago, between Jesse Jackson and Louis Farrakhan were, you know, two of the largest religious figures that were organizing people. And mm-hmm. Jesse Jackson, people don't talk about Louis Farrakhan so much anymore because he's a nuts, but he has a lot of organized people. He's very politically, he's quiet in his organization, but when politicians need something or they want a voting block or they're looking for something, mm-hmm. he's very influential. Jesse Jackson seems to have, as he's gotten older, obviously, but he's waned, and I think the years and the things around him have sort of taken a toll. It seems to me that somebody who wants to represent a new vision for the African American community in Chicago is needed. And would you want to take that mantle?
Well, I think in a small way, and maybe not so small a way. Is that I've already have represented that by the vote, number one. Now, do I want to say I represent the African American community, black and brown, or the Caucasian. Look, if it makes sense, I will only do it by consulting with those particular nationality. I wouldn't take nothing for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want nothing for myself, right? I would make sure that they win.
Do you have a vision? I guess a better way of asking this question. Do you have a vision that you think that you could apply that would make people's lives better in this city?
Well, yeah. One thing about it is this place here. Now, I am going to start my own political PAC. I'm going to do that. We had seven meetings on it, right? And so basic, what I want to do is making sure that certain community get up to speed,
mm-hmm.
right? Because let's use the African American community where I got the vote from.
Right.
Well, the politicians do not get a chance to get any particular dollars from it community, which they represent,
right.
to
a
run
good point.
For office.
It is.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So what happened is they get outside. And it comes in, those politicians still have families they got to take care of, right?
So, what your point is a really interesting point. These people are underrepresented in dollars in politics.
Right.
And if you can represent their interests in politics, not the gang interests, not the criminal interests, which have money and they do have influence, right?
Right.
But it's the working class folks that are living on those blocks that are being held down, literally at the point of a gun, by bad guys on that block, and also politically by politicians, whether they're aldermen or committeemen or state senators or state reps or whatever it is, that are partisan to those gangs, and they're out there because they've gotten elected by them, but with money.
Right.
That influence needs to wane, and I see you as the superhero who has to descend here and help, because you get it. You you've got the life's experience to be able to say, hey, there's another way.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. We're going to put on a fundraiser, PAC, and I'm going to donate money out of my own pocket, too. But I figure next 12 months for the PAC starting out, try to raise about $3 to $5 million.
Yeah.
Putting on different fundraisers. I'm going to invite you all to this world largest stepping.
Oh my God! Oh,
you have to step.
Oh well, now you see.
Oh
yeah. All right, now I'm gonna have to show you my moves. I'm gonna just have to.
You're gonna break them out.
I'm gonna have to show the doctor my fine moves. Actually, the two of us are gonna have to do something. I would love to do that. I would like to be a part of what you're doing, because I think that there's a way. Because we're both Chicagoans, we both love this city. We want the best for this city.
Right.
And the only way for this city to be at its greatest is to have an understanding and people, coming together. In common cause, and that's a great common cause.
It is.
Right.
Stepping
I love the idea.
Is beyond a great common cause. That's a separate issue. All right, Willie Wilson, you're our guy. Just remember that for always and forever. We'll come right back. We've got Kim Gordon. She's got the news and the unbelievable news now that is developing here in this story out of Cincinnati, that this child that has identified himself as Timothy Pitson is not him.
Stunning.
Not him. Stunning development. How did that all come to be? We're going to get details on that coming up. But let's check the traffic right now. Here is Pam Jones. Kim Gordon is standing by in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN in 2 minutes. And she's going to share this latest information. This young 14-year-old boy that they found down in Cincinnati, who identified himself as a missing child from here, is not that child. News in two. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Yes, here he is, Mr. Tom Skilling, brought to us by Permaseal Basement Systems.
Ro, how are you? Hi, Anna.
Hi, Tom. You've done us right here today with the Sox game.
You definitely steered us in the right direction.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's going to be a much prettier day, much better
day
for all of this,
yep.
for us to enjoy ourselves out at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not going to be gorgeously sunny, but it won't be raining. The winds won't be as strong off the lake. There'll be some cooling by the lake. But I would imagine we'll have 50s tomorrow versus the 40s we had today.
I'll take the 5-0.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Me too.
It's real nice over by 5-0. Mm-hmm. Hey, okay, so like a couple of different stories are developing here that are just so bizarre. I'm not exactly sure what to do with them, and we will have more details coming up, I think, in the next half hour on the situation where it's a case where we thought maybe this young boy, this 14-year-old boy in Cincinnati, was this missing from years ago, from 8 years ago, was a 6-year-old when went missing. And it turns out that that is not the boy, although he identified himself as a boy. Who would know to do that?
Isn't that something at his age?
If I could just interrupt for a minute, we now know the true identity of this man. He's 24 years old. His name is Brian Rainey. He's from Medina, Ohio.
It's a 24-year-old?
Wait, which man?
24-year-old.
The man who said he was Timothy Pitson. A
14-year-old.
Gotcha. Yes. Oh. Well, then he's old enough to think through whatever he's got in his mind.
Yes, it's and Timothy's family is also speaking right now. Wow. So we will have that for you coming up.
I bet they're heartbroken.
Imagine how that plays with their emotions, those poor people.
What a horrible situation. How to deal with that?
And how would he know? That's just a crazy thing.
Isn't that the truth? If you're evil-minded and you to put that together and brief yourself on the specifics so that you come off as somewhat believable, it's pretty amazing. I was amazed. I hadn't realized this story was developing. You guys probably were aware of it, but we got on the air last night, and they were talking about this, and Mike Lowe was down in Cincinnati, and that's where this fellow turned himself in, right?
Right. Well, he went up to people and identified himself.
Gee.
You know, and he seemed to be haggard and might have been bruised and seemed to be malnourished. At least the people around him were saying that. So, I mean, it's just
terrible twist too. Because last night you were feeling so much hope for this family,
yes.
And I know some of them were reluctant to come forward for this very reason. They didn't want to address false hopes and sort of just lay low until they learned this. Gosh.
You know what might be good, though, if there's any silver lining here, is that perhaps the reopening of this publicly might lead to more leads or may spark somebody else to think about it or may spark even this young man to be able to identify himself. I mean, who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
And the other case that we are following is in Aurora. There's so much, and the Pitson family lives in Aurora now, mm-hmm. right? So, yes. Aurora, your hometown,
I know.
Tom.
Henry Pratt, this story.
And right.
Now, you got another one?
This is just a bizarre reliving of a story from the 1980s, which was the Ripper Crew case that was really one of the most
heinous
set of crimes
in
Chicago that, you know, from this, you know, from the modern era, if you will, because it came on the heels of John Wayne Gacy, right? And because Gacy was still, you know, those trials were going, there was still a lot going on with John Wayne Gacy when this thing came to prominence in the early 1980s. And you'd had the Tylenol killings that sort of wipe this off the map in public, but as many as 17 women were murdered by this Ripper group. They think it's 17 because they basically, between the four of them, admitted to 17 different murders. And the bodies were left in in the Gold Coast, and were left in the suburbs, and one was dropped off the Fullerton Avenue Bridge over the Chicago River.
Jeez.
And these bodies, these women were sexually assaulted and mutilated in the most heinous of ways. And one woman who they were attempting, they thought they had killed and then left for dead, lived, and that's how they were able to get these guys.
Jeez.
And the crazy thing about why we're talking about it now, it took place in 1981 and 82.
Yeah.
The reason that we're talking about it is because one of the members of this four has been released from prison, and now he is in a religious sort of, you know, halfway house kind of setting.
Yeah, in Aurora.
In Aurora.
Yeah. Right. The mayor of Aurora said he was blindsided by his release into his community and that his mere presence is disturbing to everyone around.
At 6 o'clock tonight, we're going to do a special hour on this story, because, and people should tune in for it, because people may not remember this. This is, and it's related, the crazy thing about this is that it's related to Gacy.
Huh.
Because the guy who was the ringleader, who also might get out of prison, what the ringleader of this was an electrician working for Gacy.
Oh, brother.
Now, stop and think about that for a second.
What are the chances of that happening, you know? You know, our Terry Sullivan, our legal analyst here, worked on that. Mm. I mean, he was one of the prosecutors on that case. And I, you know, he just shakes his head. It was so gross.
I talked to a bunch of lawyers today that were on the case when we were researching this. And we can't. I wouldn't even want, what they told me, I would never want to repeat.
That's the thing, is you can't even relay the details because they're so
what they
disturbing,
did. Yeah.
Horrifying.
You must have nightmares the rest of your life when you work on something like that.
Yeah.
You know? You wouldn't be human if you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I remember our Larry Roderick outside that house, and of course they eventually tore it down, but... Oh, he buried, the bodies in the basement.
Oh, in the Gacy case, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And what he did, right. And, you know, and you stop and you think about these people who just go, like, you know, totally off the deep end. You know, Gacy Dahmer in Milwaukee, right?
Yeah.
And what he was doing to the bodies. And now what these four guys were doing but they were working in tandem, you know, in mass together. And that's the crazy part. Is that you had these two brothers, Corcorella's brothers, one of the Corcorella's brothers was executed. He was the last person executed in the state of Illinois for these crimes. But his brother is the one that has just now been released.
And he was sentenced to 70 years, but he only had to serve 50% of that, which is why he's out now, because you wonder, like, what? It doesn't seem like enough, but here he is.
They claim he's rehabilitated, but you can understand.
He claims he's rehabilitated,
he says,
yes.
I'm willing to change my ways, and I want no contact with any of the families.
It wasn't the group involved in saying that, too, that's providing him the halfway house? Didn't they say that he's been, supposedly a changed human being?
Yeah. But, I suppose that we have to look at that as, especially in a religious group, that's clearly, one of the promises of Christianity, right? Yeah. It's redemption and change and all of that. But
for something so incredibly heinous, there have got to be certain acts in life that are just beyond redemption.
That's true. So it's coming away at 6 o'clock. That's it. You know, it's a dark, dreary day here in Chicago, and somehow this is what I've turned this into. And I'm just trying to meet the mood of the weather. But but anyway, I just think this story is so fascinating. I don't think people, and I don't think Chicagoans, many Chicagoans will remember this story.
Yeah.
And it was it was not at the time the size of a story that you would have today because, again, it was happening around the time of the Tylenol murder case.
Yeah, remember that? Was another winner.
A guy was poisoning Tylenol capsules. And by the way, and who was the prosecutor, I might add, on the Tylenol murder case?
Who was it?
It was Mr. Michael Monaco.
Oh, for gosh sakes, is that right? Yeah. I didn't.
Wow.
I hadn't remembered
that. How about that?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. He was the defense attorney for the Tylenol guy.
Mm.
I want to correct all that. I'm going to check all that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was one of the two attorneys that was involved in that case on one side or the other. We'll find out.
I'm dying to hear your program at 6 because I would ask you now, except that I know you're probably going to cover this, but, I mean, did they ever hear any explanation from this bunch of losers on what their thought process was in this, why they were doing it?
They teed it up to a satanic cult that they were... I don't know. We're going to find out.
Yeah.
And I don't know for sure what the answer to that is, and we'll find out other than satanic cult. You would imagine that there had to be some drug use, too.
Oh,
that's
brother.
What I was wondering.
Yeah, I heard voices in their heads or something like that. Oh, brother.
Michael Monaco was the defense attorney that was his first major case for the Tylenol guy. And now Michael Cohen. He goes from Tylenol to Michael Cohen. I just want to point that out. Our own Michael Monaco.
Talk about a talented attorney, huh? With a wide range of clients.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That is for certain.
Well, Ro, I'm going to leave you and get treatment here because I'm
serious.
God, I am so all down after
can you just
all
tell
this?
Me the weekend? Just get, tell me the weekend.
Well, it's going to warm up. There's an important caveat because I don't want everybody on downtown and along the lake on Saturday saying, well, where's the warming? Because the wind's going to come off the water, and that'll probably keep the temperatures in the 50s downtown and on the lake Saturday. But it'll go to the mid to upper 60s inland, and then a southeast wind that could probably cool the lakefront still in the morning Sunday. We should go south-southwest. And should we achieve that, that ought to push us into the low 70s, even along the lakefront later in the day. So Sunday, that'd be the warmest weekend period or temperature that we've had in 6 months around here. And this weekend should average about 25 degrees warmer than last, which is no achievement because last weekend was, by spring standards, barbarically cool.
Yes, you know? That's an imperfect comparison.
It is. But it's all relative.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Because, you are my, have always been my weather hero. Mm-hmm. You always will be. You're the top of the mountain. There's nobody even comes close to you. Having said that, though, some other pretender to the throne mentioned temperatures with eights in front of them for later next week or the following week. Are you showing trending like
no,
that?
No.
All right.
Nothing even close.
Thank you very much. Okay.
And in fact, there was one weird set of runs that showed us a snowstorm late next week.
Oh, my God.
But by the same token, that's Nutsville, too. I mean, you know, we're out in the fantasy range, and these models get kind of crazy at times. Yeah. But the bottom line is, no, I'll tell you, Ro, in fact, we go below normal Wednesday or Thursday next week, and we stay that way pretty much through the remainder of the two-week period. We'll get close to normal and just a tad above early the following week, but it looks like a seasonable to below seasonal level.
All right, I quit.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I wish that were true.
All right, let's do it one weekend at a time. This weekend's going to be okay. Let's just
kind of cloudy, and it could rain, scattered showers Sunday afternoon, but who cares?
We're getting baseball in tomorrow. We're getting baseball in on Monday.
Yeah, Monday will be great for the Cubs. Rain mentions out of the forecast, and we may get up to 68. The big difference is going to be, it'll be a little less humid on Monday. So, warm weather doesn't feel quite as warm when you remove some of the humidity, but still 68 on Monday. That's pretty good.
You know what? 68 with low humidity is exactly like a perfect day. When you get to August and September, you're like, isn't this great?
Beautiful.
Now it's like, oh, it's so kind of chilly. I don't know what to do. All right. Thank you, Tom.
All right, guys. See you later.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye, Tom.
Bye.
Finally, a laugh on the show. My God.
I know.
Oh, my God. All right. Thank you, sir. Let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's happening at the bottom of the hour?
Ro, we now know the true identity of the man who claimed to be Timothy Pitson, the missing Aurora boy.
All right, here's what I got for you.
What's that?
I got two family four-packs of tickets to see the Sox take on the Mariners.
Woo!
That is coming your way on Sunday. We heard that's going to be a very beautiful day.
Mm-hmm. Love a family Sunday on the South Side.
Family Sunday, South Side, two four-packs. Colors number 10 and 15. 10 for Yohan Makata, right? And Adam Engel, 15, because I like how he climbs up on the fence.
He's good at that. He's good at Robin Homer.
He's a guy that just goes over the fence, that glove dips over, and he catches the ball, and it's out. And that's a great, great skill to have. It's my favorite play in all of baseball, by far. That and the triple play, which I've never seen live. I would like to at some point actually see that live, but never. All right, got that? Caller number 10 and 15, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 rips us off for these tickets to go see the Sox take on the Mariners on Sunday. All right, Kim Gordon has got the news coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2 minutes. Where's my microphone? It's right here.
You got it. It's in front of you right there.
It's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis coming up at top 5 at 5 after 5 o'clock. And Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here in the 5 o'clock hour as well because Pet Sematary is out. Best of Enemies is out. That looks like that might be that's what Taraji P. Henson, who's from that's from the Empire.
Love her.
She's Jussie Smollett's mother, isn't she? Mm. Is that how that goes? Yeah.
She's in the Empire.
Yeah. And Shazam. which is this is interesting.
Brings you back to childhood, yeah. Me at least.
Exactly. And then the 6 o'clock hour, we're going to take more of an in-depth look into this situation where a guy who's a convicted mass murderer has been released from prison, and he is now taking up residency in Aurora, and the people in Aurora are not happy about it.
No.
So we'll explain exactly what happened in that story. I think it's a forgotten, one of the worst crime stories in Chicago, and it's sort of a forgotten story because it happened in the shadow of Gacy, and it happened in the shadow of the Tylenol killings and all that. So it was like a whole kind of a terrible moment in Chicago for that, for kind of terror killings. And this one was just as awful as any of them, and we'll explain all of that to you coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. Kevin Durkin is with us.
Yeah.
He is from Clifford Law, which is one of the biggest law firms here in the, not in the Chicago area, but in the nation. And certainly the premier one when it comes to aviation law and aviation injury law. And what is, to me, most, it's very tragic. The 737 MAX crash, we keep thinking about that. I think a lot of Americans stop and think, well, all right, that was an Ethiopian airline, or that was Lion Air, and that happened somewhere else. And, could those pilots have, would that ever have happened in America? Are the pilots differently trained? As it turns out, in the Ethiopian crash, those pilots were trying to do everything that was in the manual to fix this problem that Boeing knew about. Right?
That's correct.
And Kevin's one of the attorneys now representing the family of an American, young American woman who was lost in the Ethiopian crash. And, when it comes to things like this, people get stop thinking, oh, well, it's, personal injury cases, and lawyers are always out to make money on tragedy. You have to look at it differently. You have to look at it, how many lives could be saved here. Because if Boeing and, maybe some of the other folks along the line here who made mistakes, including, by the way, up to and including the federal government for some of the things that they did here, because they started letting the fox watch the hen house.
That's correct, Ro. That over the last several years, maybe the last 15 years, the FAA has delegated a lot of the certification responsibility to employees of Boeing who put both hats on, allegedly.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, their paycheck is from Boeing.
That might be one of the most disturbing things that we're starting to learn about this, because if the FAA has this cozy relationship with Boeing, safety is not the number one priority, would be the inference from all of that, that we're seeing what happened in this crash, that there were some things that were overlooked.
Certainly. This crash involved what's been known as a single point of failure. Any aerospace engineer will tell you one component failure or one product failure on an airplane should not cause the plane to crash and everyone perish.
It's always said that when a plane crashes, it's a cascade of events. It's one event that may lead to a series of other events, but there generally is an interruptible moment in those events. In this case, it was so... this may be such a single point, catastrophic single point, because if you have let's go back and explain what it is that we're looking at here. It's... As the plane is taking off, there are these sensors in the plane that are always calculating for the computer brain of the aircraft, always calculating how fast the plane is going, and what they call the angle of attack, which is which way the nose is pointed. And if the nose is pointed too high, and the plane slows down, you will then get a wing stall. The plane will fall out of the air. And so this system that they put in here is designed to keep that from happening, but it poorly reacted.
That's correct. The angle of attack is basically the angle between the wing and the airflow. The sensor is to tell the aircraft through the computer that the angle of attack is getting too high, and the plane could go into an aerodynamic stall, as you mentioned. The problem here is that with a faulty sensor, what it does is it tells the computer and tells the plane to have the tail move so the nose of the plane goes down. Okay? So while the angle of attack's too high, that may be a good thing to get you back to level flight.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're at level flight and the plane's telling you your angle of attack's too high, it's taking you towards the ground.
Right. It pointed the plane down. At level flight, it pointed the plane into the ground.
Into the ground. And you're not, the altitude here was not much over 1,000 feet because above the ground at the time.
And there's no time there.
Well, there's very little time.
You have the New York Times had the captain's actual radio back to the control tower trying to request return to land the plane because he knew right away he wasn't able to control the plane would be what you would assume from that. It was a panicky voice. He said he wanted to return, obviously knew something was wrong and couldn't correct it. And in fact, the investigators are saying that the pilots followed the preliminary reports, that they followed all of the procedures that Boeing gave them and still couldn't stop the plane from nose diving. Pretty damning.
That's correct. It was 1 minute to the flight. He reported back that he wanted to return because he had flight control problems. And it's just come out in the last 48 hours from sources that they did follow the procedure that Boeing said he should have followed. Okay? So there you go.
So that's all Boeing can say here. And, you know, I'm shocked. I have such respect for the history of Boeing and for what they've done, and the product they make, because the products that they have made over the years have been the finest ever in commercial aviation. But this seems like a catastrophic set of decisions that were made corporately. That this plane came out of the hangar, that this system. The way that this system is currently configured was allowed to be deemed airworthy is, I mean, and the plane will, they'll be able to fix this, and that plane will be airworthy. And I don't think people should be afraid once this thing is fixed of flying this particular aircraft. But it's just unbelievable to me that, especially after the first crash, that they didn't do anything about it.
Well, certainly. You know, that crash was October 29th. This plane was not delivered to Ethiopia Airlines to November 15th.
So 2 weeks after the crash.
It was delivered to them.
Yeah.
Okay? It's only a four-month-old plane. This isn't an old plane that had parts that were going wrong or any type of a aging plane issue. This was a brand-new aircraft.
So is this more of a software, based on Kevin, on your analysis of this so far, and it's early in the case, but is this a sense of a faulty, one faulty sensor on one particular aircraft or a larger software problem?
Well, you don't know how many sensors are faulty, right? Because we have two so far, we believe, and there could be many more. But it's also a training issue. You know, Boeing, it appears that Boeing rushed this through and wanted not to change the type of the plane, the 737, so that there would have to be additional pilot training by the airlines. So there was very
little. So in this new variant of the 737, because they have the 737-800 and 900, right, the two most recent, then they introduced this 737 MAX, which this has a different engine configuration on it. The engines are a little heavier and further forward than they are in those two previous ones I talked about. Right. So the actual flight dynamics of this aircraft are different.
That's correct. And there was no required, the airlines had no required simulator training. They had additional one than they had on the 800 and the 900, or no additional
training. Even though they're two different things to fly.
That's correct, and that was because airlines don't want to have to retrain all their pilots.
Right.
So they were trained in the 800 and 900, and they said this one will just be the same.
So they were sending out like a, you could qualify on the MAX if you were an 800 or 900 pilot. You could qualify on the 737 MAX by taking basically a computer test.
That's right.
On your iPad or your laptop or whatever.
That's true.
I mean, I do that every night when I go home for my simulator. And that doesn't work. Nobody wants me in the cockpit. It's just haunting to me.
It is.
That this company that is, and again, Chicago-based, amazing history, has always been well managed and well run.
Great safety record.
Yeah, amazing safety record. Amazing safety record. And yet they could stumble so dramatically on this. Now, they are attempting to react to it now, right?
Well, that's true, but it seems like we're the last country to ground the aircraft after this. So
we also have the most amount in flight, right? Most amount in because I think we're close to 100 of them. And,
yes, that's correct. But but we were the last country to do that, and it seems to me that we knew the most about this aircraft. Other countries were grounding it, and we kept it going. And then there was a lot of pressure put on Congress, and the Congress was putting pressure, and then it was grounded.
Yeah. Well, and we talked to pilots here that have flown that aircraft and did say that, you know, there are other things that these crews should have been, you know, aware of, but but that they agree that the training seemed unusual for them. That very rarely do you get a new variant, and all you got to do is take a test on an iPad.
That was just not enough. And I think that what you've hit on is the kind of the cozy relationship that's come between the FAA and the Boeing because of the way they handle certification. Yeah.
So Boeing is part of you're filing suit against Boeing, but then there's a separate claim, what, against the FAA?
That's true. We did file a suit against Boeing and Ethiopian Airlines under what's called the Montreal Convention and Raymond Aerospace, which is the manufacturer of the sensor. But you cannot file suit against the federal government directly without first going through an administrative claim. And so we filed that claim this morning. Mm-hmm. They have 6 months to act on the claim. They could say we accept it, which never happens, or they reject it. And then we have 6 months to file suit after that.
Got it.
Or until the statute of limitations.
We're out of time here, but it is an amazing story. This one woman who was lost. Her family, you guys did a press conference earlier today. Family is very devastated. Moving. 24-year-old girl who was going and doing literally God's work in Ethiopia. Working for a healthcare, a religious-based healthcare consortium to bring healthcare to people who don't have it, and it is an absolute and the family can't bring any part of her home because there's nothing but a charred hole in the ground where it happened. It's just it is unbelievable.
Ralph Nader's grandniece too. I know he's been out talking about it as a consumer advocate.
Incredible family.
Relative.
Yeah. Incredible family.
All right, Kevin Durkin from Clifford Law. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Let's check in with Kim Gordon. What's going on at the top of the hour in the news?
Roe, a heartbroken family speaking out after a man found in Kentucky turned out not to be missing Aurora boy Timothy Pitson.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN. And yes, we are here to serve you. Tomorrow, we will be here right about this time. We'll be back on the air as the White Sox home opener is tomorrow, starting at 1 o'clock on WGN. And we're all going to be out there starting it. I'll be there with Mr. Cochran in the morning for at least 25% of his show.
What do you mean? At least
that means that I don't have to be there till 9.
Oh,
and then we've got the big Cork and Carry pre-opening day tailgate. Could you call it?
Sure. Pre-game gathering.
Right. Hootenanny. Yeah,
Hootenanny.
I don't think that's what we'll call it. But okay.
Always fun at the Cork and Carry. Cannot go wrong.
Who like Sox fans, who the blank just called it a hootenanny? What the blank does that mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, there is...
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be... it's so much fun there.
Cork and Carry is one of my favorite bars in the city.
It's
a great spot.
It's
both Cork and Carry.
Both are, yeah.
You know, I mean, the thing is, if you're a Sox fan, you go to the Cork and Carry right there on 33rd. Turdy Turd, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Or on Western Avenue.
That one's good, too.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong.
No. Well, let me put it to you this way.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go right in there, either.
Things don't always go right for you. That's kind of a good bar, actually.
Right. Yeah.
That's what happens.
But like 106th,
sometimes.
Is that where it is? Something like that? Right about there?
Sounds right.
Right about over by there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of place where, I found trouble.
Found trouble.
Sometimes trouble just finds you, Ro.
That's not exactly correct, no.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now.
Now, it's the Top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Checking in at
number 5.
One of the more bizarre stories of the last number of years.
No question.
It just unveiled itself within the last 36 hours. Louisville FBI says that DNA results show that a man identifying himself as a 14-year-old boy who claimed he had been missing for the last 8 years from Aurora, Timothy Pitson, the DNA test shows that it's not him. That's not Timothy Pitson. It's a 24-year-old man who appears to be posing as Timothy Pitson.
What a nightmare.
How could that be? Pitson's grandmother, Alana Anderson, just a few moments ago, says that the family has endured so much heartbreak, but they are still not going to give up hope.
It's been awful. We've been on tenterhooks. We've been hopeful, alternately hopeful, and frightened, and it's just been exhausting. But as Kara said, I feel so sorry for the young man who's obviously had a horrible time and felt the need to say he was someone else, and hope that they can find his family.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and it turns out that they may not need to find this guy's
No,
family.
This guy's got a history of being arrested, including for fraud and misrepresentation. He's known to law enforcement for making false claims. So I'm not sure we should be feeling sorry for Mr. Rinney, the 24-year-old who posed, it appears, as a 14-year-old boy who's missing. You just feel for that family.
Oh, my God.
I mean, imagine
this whole thing's awful.
1 hour of dealing with, is it him? You know, is it possibly? Are we going to be reunited with our family member? Is just painful and heartbreaking.
Checking in at
number 4.
Chicago police, I don't think I'm going out on a limb here when I say this, have been unhappy with Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox. Well, who hasn't been unhappy with Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox?
I know someone else who's been unhappy.
I can name someone.
I can too.
Who's sitting right here behind my eyeballs.
That's right.
Who is also unhappy with her. There's one person happy with her, Jussie Smollett. Why do I get so animated about this?
You do. You call for her resignation right away.
I'm still calling for her resignation, and I am not alone.
Now you're not.
No. There was a news conference today. And the Fraternal Order of Police represent the Chicago Police Department along with 30 suburban Illinois police departments also would like to see her step down.
Many times the hoops that we have to go through to try to get a felony charge, and then most of the time they're either not approved or the charges are dismissed in court without an officer's opinion, without notifying the police agency or the police officer themselves. So basically, in essence, she's putting criminals back on the street, either during the process or not charging them at all, and allowing them to go back on the street and commit their crimes again.
Yeah. Wait, there's more.
We have a problem with the state's attorney not going after the people who should be remaining in jail, giving certificates of innocence, and it's a continuous problem. We need to have a prosecutor who is going to charge people when they commit a crime. If there's no charges and nobody goes to jail, then obviously the law doesn't mean anything to anyone. That's a problem.
That is a problem. There's a problem there.
It's a problem. The other problem for Jussie Smollett is the $130,000 that the city is suing him for, or telling him he has to pay for the cost of investigation. That's due today. No sign of that $130,000.
Where's Rahm Emanuel on this? We should assign Rahm Emanuel to go collect it personally from Jussie Smollett.
Rahm the bounty hunter?
Yeah. He's got nothing better to do.
He's got some free time coming up.
Yeah.
He'd be really good at that job.
I think he would too. Just hounding him.
You know what? You know who else could do it if we really need it? Toni Preckwinkle. She's got nothing better to do right now except run the county government. Send her out there.
Job.
That will make him not want to do it again. Spend an hour with her. going to the bank.
This is your punishment, Justin. Right. You have to sit in a room with Preckwinkle for an hour.
What kind of mood do you think she's in right now? Right? True. And then she's going to take him to the bank. You know, right. All right, we're going to go. We're going to get a cashier's check.
She can't be happy with him either.
Yeah.
So the deadline's today to reimburse the city, Jesse.
Wait, we have Samuel L. Jackson reenacting this?
Look here, man. Don't you think it's about time you gave me my money?
I told you I ain't had your money yet, man.
What the f*** you mean you ain't got my money yet?
I ain't got your money yet, man.
What the f*** you mean you ain't got the money yet? You best be coming up with my cash help, you know what I'm saying?
Get him on this. He'll kick some ass.
Oh, my God. You know where Samuel L. Jackson is on this, too. You know, he is on our side on this one. Right?
He's like, calling it out big
this,
time.
This is not this. See, because what Justice Smollett did, what he did, mm-hmm. wasn't he. I mean, and I get that the police are all upset about this with Kim Fox, and I get that as well. I understand why everybody's mad at Kim Fox, because she's like the ultimate dope in this. But. But what Jesse did was trickification, right? He was trying to use the tone, the mood, the darkness that has descended in our public discourse against us. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to make himself a victim to help himself personally,
right.
Taking advantage of what people really have to deal with, who have a lot less power and a lot less influence and a lot less money.
Yeah.
And it's just beyond awful.
It is.
All right. Okay, we'll get to your 3-year, 2-year, 1. We're not done with this because Jesse Smollett comes up again.
Oh, good.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Watch out, Ro. Get the defibrillator.
Kim, what's happening at the bottom of the hour?
The man who claimed to be Timothy Pitson appears to have a lengthy criminal record.
Get Real in the Morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV Morning News team. It's all weekdays, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. on WGN.
All right, hold on. Okay. We're at the top five.
Number 3.
I'm going to try to remain calm Please. While I read this.
I know you won't be able to do that, though. I fear that you
I can. Like when you lose
Take
your mind.
Take a deep breath.
When Empire comes back for its 6th season... Mm-hmm. Jesse Smollett is likely to be a part of the cast.
Hmm.
At least according to Taraji P. Henson.
She would know.
Right. She's the mom. She's his mom on the show. She talked to The View about Jesse and his role going forward.
Mm-hmm. The charges against him have been dropped, and you say you are, quote, happy the truth has finally been set free. Mm-hmm. Have you spoken with Jesse?
Yeah, I talk to Jesse all the time. Yeah. And he's doing well. Okay. Yeah, we're all doing well.
Oh,
the show is doing well. We're on hiatus right now. The mm-hmm. writers are trying to figure out what the next season is going to look like, what our storyline is going to be. They're trying to drum up some really good juicy stuff for you guys. So
oh, God.
That's what we are right now. I'm about
Jesse
to go to
gonna be on the show?
Yes. I haven't heard he anything is. Else. Okay.
They should have him fake a hate crime on one of the episodes.
Yeah.
See how I mean, that goes.
Really? Really?
What does that mean, the truth has been set free?
Yeah, the truth has not
been... What does that mean?
The truth has not been set free. It's sealed, and you can't even right. get an ounce of information about what happened after they had emergency hearing and no one was allowed to witness it. The records have been wiped clean.
See, we've had
no
this...
truth.
We've had this happen on both of the spectrum right now, right? As soon as you just... You cover it up, and they go, hey, there's nothing to see
yeah.
here. And you've seen that... It's like, oh my God! Oh my God!
I'd like to see you watch.
The truth, I mean, and she was reading that. I'm so offended as a Chicagoan that this is happening and that nationally the story is turning into, yeah, see, it was bad in Chicago.
He's Jesse, a victim.
Jesse's a nice young man, and look at what happened to him. Look at those guys. I know that they were... African Americans, but they were in whiteface.
With no one mega believes hats that. In the polar vortex.
Yeah, and they're apparently Trump supporters. The Oh my God, I almost said it. Oh my God.
I know it's going to get you there, Ro.
I am.
You got to watch out.
You know what? I'm going to say it. I'm going to walk away. I'm not going to dump it. And I'm going to let somebody else handle it.
Oh.
I refuse to even stop myself.
Oh boy. Now. Here we go.
Number two. Please.
Familiarize yourself with the dump button, Hannah.
I need to know where this is. I really don't.
Oh. There was a big gala premiere for the 8th and final season of Game of Thrones. It was in New York City.
Just that music does something visceral to me. Like, I get it. I'm getting ready, and I'm getting scared about what's going to happen.
Amelia Clark, you know, she's the mother of dragons, first of her name. You know her?
Mm-hmm. Love her.
Said she's proud to be part of the series, but she must give credit to the producers and the writers.
I feel incredibly lucky to have played the Mother of Dragons for 8 seasons. I feel very, very, very proud. But it definitely wasn't me. It was the incredible writing of David Benioff and Dan Weiss.
No, it was you. It was partly you. She's incredible. She really
is. She is incredible.
How does she convince you that there's this love for these dragons? I mean, I don't. She just she's an incredible actress.
She's first of all, she's fun sized. That's number one. Number two.
She doesn't look anything like the person she is on Game of Thrones.
Nothing like her. She is unrecognizable outside of that blonde wig.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's like, I mean, she's a beautiful woman, but she's, but it's like, it's a totally different, this is like the best disguise ever. It's like, since Jennifer Garner put on a red wig and Alias, have I not been able to not figure out who anybody is?
I don't like her talking about it in past tense, though.
Oh, she is so good.
She is.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what she does next, but I'm super excited for this season.
Yeah. No, but the dragons are kind of pretty in their own way. Because they got that sort of plume of dragonness on their backs. I don't know what that is.
Do you find yourself feeling for the dragons at all?
Which is weird, because she does too, and I don't know. This show has totally screwed me up.
Number one.
Jimmy Kimmel's in Las Vegas.
Oh.
And he shared with America how kid-friendly Las Vegas really can be.
Vegas is a great place for kids. They have sharks and dolphins. They have a pool in every hotel. There's a Ferris wheel. There's a butterfly sanctuary. It is also a terrible place for children. There are strippers on the sidewalk. There are trucks advertising girls to your room with naked women on them. People are smoking. People are gambling. There are bachelorettes crying and carrying their shoes.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Mr. Richard Roper has stepped into the studio.
Yep, got my Moncada for MVP shirt on. Just had it made today.
Very cool.
He's being
front running.
Being brought to us. Don't tell me.
I know who's bringing me.
Who's bringing you?
Go ahead.
No, tell me.
You may be the only one who does know.
I think if you
turns
if
out.
If I say it, it doesn't count.
Wait, hold on. No, I made a mistake here. I've lost it. I think I do know. I think it's Architect, right? It's always Architect.
Yes.
But
yes.
I just want to make sure that didn't change. No. So let's just go with that.
Yes.
All right. It's Architect. Yes. And my dear friends, Kristen and David Berryhill.
The best.
They are.
All right. Okay. We got to, before we get to the movies.
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Did you see the story in Bleacher Report about how blanked up the Green Bay Packers are?
Wow.
Did you see this? It turns out that there's a bunch of whistleblowers inside the Packers organization that want to tell their story, including two guys who've actually named in the story who are former.
How about that?
Sir Michael Finley and Greg Jennings, who forever Jennings was Rodgers' guy. That was his go-to receiver.
Kind of his Gronk.
And Jennings says Rodgers sort of is done with Jennings after all these years. He's kind of turned his back on
Rodgers is a Jag.
He totally is.
And that Kevin McCarthy, right?
Mike McCarthy.
Yeah. Who's Kevin McCarthy?
The senator.
Thank you.
Or Congressman, whatever.
Mike McCarthy, the coach that had the Sharpie in his ear.
Yeah.
Total moron.
Wow. Yeah.
But I think Aaron Rodgers gets the prize, doesn't he?
How about
for the
that?
Worst of the worst?
But he always seems so likable on those commercials where the insurance agent and the sports agent are fighting for his affections.
No, he didn't.
And the discount double check.
Because he makes them fight for his affections. And he makes fun of the guy for taking a deuce in the bathroom, when it was on fire.
And of course,
remember that?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, remember his brother was on one of the was like a bachelor, the mm-hmm. bachelorette
oh,
thing.
Yeah.
And then he wouldn't talk to his family because he was dating that Olivia Munn, the Hollywood right. actress. And then all of a sudden, he broke up with his entire family.
Yeah. Every story about him is always very painful. It just points to him not being a good guy.
That's not a Packer thing to do. You don't throw the family over for the actress.
Well, in the story, it says McCarthy basically tried to have some sort of intervention with Rogers about the family issue. And Rogers basically told him to... screw off.
Yeah, and McCarthy was, instead of going to team meetings, he was taking massages in his office.
Towards the end of his tenure.
If you know what that means.
Hold on a second.
Okay. It could mean
Bobby K. Special.
It means he's getting a massage from Ming Fu Hulu. All right.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Before we go anywhere, Kim Gordon has got Jesse Smollett news.
Uh-oh.
Take a deep breath. Are you ready? We have a statement from the city of Chicago. He has refused to reimburse the city for the cost of police overtime spent investigating his false report. The law department of the city now drafting a civil complaint. A suit will be filed and in the very near future, and they said that's all they have to say about it at this time.
Oh, my God!
And he might be returning to Empire. Sounds like he is, according to Taraji P. Henson.
Interesting stuff, as always. They're going to go after everybody else like they went after. There's a lot of people that would hold them money if they're going to start going after everybody who's had them using resources for something that didn't pan out.
That may well be true, but I want Jesse's money. I want 130 grand from that guy because he did it and he brought international besmirchment to the city of Chicago. The crown prince of Saudi Arabia is like, take a look at those guys. What goes on there, Chicago?
I cannot believe
it is so crazy over there with the police and the thing. This poor Jesse Smollett.
Saudi Arabian prince and mini mart owner, both that you're same thing
as far as I'm concerned. All right, hold on.
So the first Pet Cemetery.
Yeah, let's do the movies.
I'm trying to.
All right, so Pet Cemetery.
We're talking about Pet Cemetery?
Yes.
Stephen King, who of course has been the source of. His books have probably been turned into more great movies than any author, going all the way back to those pikers, you know, Dickens and Shakespeare and Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, everything from Carrie to It to Misery to Stand By Me to Shawshank Redemption, you name it, Stephen King. So Pet Sematary was one of his most popular novels, and they made a movie about it in 1989. I actually reviewed that movie in 1989. I think Roger took the day off, and I gave it 0 stars. So... the good news is this one is not a 0-star movie, but I still kind of hate it. And I'm giving it 2 stars. And I'll tell you why. If people don't know the story of Pet Cemetery, family moves from Boston to the obligatory house in the country in Maine, surrounded by 50 acres of densely, you know, populated woods, which is never a good idea, right? And there's a pet cemetery and then an Indian burial ground. And they hear that if you bury your pet there, it'll come back to life. And then maybe that would even work for a human. So mom and dad, the little girl gets hit by a giant truck zooming on the highway because they also buy the house right next to, you know, I Go Too Fast in Maine.
Right.
Smashes the 9-year-old, kills the little child, the adorable little girl. And they give her a funeral and a burial and the whole thing. And then what does dad do in the middle of the night? He digs her up and takes her to the burial ground, drops her in that burial ground so she'll come back to life.
Okay.
So here's a little clip from that family film.
What's going on?
I wasn't ready to say goodbye to her.
You're scaring me. Just tell me what you're talking about.
It was my fault she died. I had to bring her back. There's a place rage deep in the woods. Beyond the pet cemetery. It brings things back.
Aren't you happy, Mommy?
Oh, God.
That's creepy.
All right, I'm done.
No, I'm not. I like it.
That's the 9-year-old daughter who has now come back and walks in. And mommy, as you could tell, is freaking out because daddy thought it'd be a good idea to bring her back to life. The thing is, the ground is sour. So when they come back, you know, they never come back the same way.
No.
You know, it's zombie time, you know. And the little girl is really mad now because she didn't want to be brought back because she's dead. So now you've got a movie where the 9-year-old is trying to kill her parents, basically. And I always have a problem when movies put the children in that role
yeah.
of being the killers or being the psychos or whatever. And I know it's all make-believe and everything, but it's hard to separate yourself from the little girl playing that role and what parent would want her daughter to play that role of sticking a knife into mommy and twisting it.
Ugh.
And that's just one of the most grisly scenes that I've seen in movies. There's plenty of others like that. So it's really well made, and I think some people are going to love it, but I'm telling you right now, I found it more grotesque and exploitive and sadistic than really scary.
Oh.
You know, gross, disgusting. And yeah, I mean, you're bringing a cat. The cat dies. You know, Church the cat, perfectly nice little cat. He also gets run over by a truck. Church comes back from the dead, mm-hmm. from the burial ground,
yeah. mm-hmm.
snarling and growling and scratching and got those wild eyes, jumping in the crib, trying to go after the baby. I mean, come on. That's not good.
No, I think I'm going to go see Us because I haven't seen that yet.
There
so if you want to get
that's
scared,
real horror.
Right.
So 2 stars for Pet Sematary, mainly because it is a well-directed, well-acted film. But it's just, to me, it's not one of Stephen King's. The novel is lot more interesting than the movie.
All right. I want to find out about Shazam on the other side. Don't
Good
anybody
idea.
Move. Mr. Richard Roper is here. He's reviewing. Coming up after 6 o'clock, we're going to give you a little bit of an in-depth into this story that is shaking Aurora, where there's a guy involved in one of the most grisly series of murders in Chicago history who has been released from jail and now is taking up residence in Aurora. What was that series of murders all about? You're going to want to stay tuned for that story coming up. But first, let's check in. Kim, what's happening at the top of the hour?
Ro, as we told you, Empire actor Jesse Smollett refuses to pay up. Now the city's taking legal action.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Coming up, Kim Gordon in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is here. Shazam is a movie that is coming out this weekend. And it's kind of Deadpool-ish, right?
Well, yeah, that's a great description of it, like a PG Deadpool. You know, the history of Shazam is really fascinating because in the comic books back in the 30s, this character was called Captain Marvel. That was the name of the character for decades. And then the company that had the Shazam, at the time Captain Marvel, they went out of business, and the Marvel Universe snapped up the name Captain Marvel. Not that long ago. That's why they've only recently had the movie with Brie Larson in. They couldn't have a Captain Marvel character back in 2001, 2008, when they were first doing Iron Man and stuff, because that Captain Marvel was still this guy. So now DC, the other comic universe, this is the Superman, Batman universe, they just 4 or 5 years ago said, we're going to call him Shazam. So that's why there isn't a long history of Shazam comics, because it was Captain Marvel. But now Captain Marvel's a woman, and Shazam's a boy, not really a man.
But Shazam was on Saturday morning television.
That was a different Shazam.
What?
Oh,
yeah.
No, really?
Yeah, that was actually, that's not the same Shazam story as this one, which is actually Big. Remember the movie Big? Everybody loved the movie Big,
yeah.
right? Tom Hanks.
Big meets Superman. That's what this movie is. 14-year-old boy. He lives in a foster home in Cincinnati. And through a series of things that happen in these sorts of movies, he learns that if he says the word Shazam, he becomes a 35-year-old superhero and then has to figure out his powers. So it's kind of like, you know, when Spider-Man first figures out his stuff, but also the Deadpool thing. So it's a lighthearted, there's some drama, you know, in it. It is PG-13. But compared to most of these movies, this guy, it's because he's a 14-year-old in a superhero's body, that gives it the big element where he, you know, he's goofy. He says, oh, wow, he realizes he looks like he's 35.
Like Tom Hanks did when in Big.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So it's like, you know, his first instinct is to buy beer, and he takes one drink of it and spits it out. Ooh, that's horrible. And then goes and buys a bunch of candy because he's 14.
But it's still triggered by the word Shazam.
But it wasn't the TV show when we were kids. I mean, I was a kid.
I never saw the TV show. I don't know anything about the TV show.
I remember the TV show.
Yeah, Shazam and Isis. It used to be
Isis.
Right, there was
the
like,
almighty Isis.
Right, and then she would say Isis, Isis, Isis or something and then turn into a queen. And
they were probably not using that anymore, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
That one doesn't hold up as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But Shazam, I mean, it was kind of creepy because it felt like a little like a molester story. It was this guy who was traveling around with a kid who would say Shazam and then he would become this superhero. Like an adult superhero.
Well, I don't know. That sounds like the same story. I don't know anything about the TV show.
There was a guy who drove him around in a van.
Oh.
Well, and see, that part, was it like an older guy who was like his mentor?
Oh, geez.
Oh, I hope you don't have to become
Shazam.
Did he
tell him
to
put the
right
lotion
now
in the basket?
That was weird. It was very weird, yeah.
Wow. I honestly, I can tell you this. I've never seen the television show. I don't know if there's a connection with this movie. Maybe there is. I could have missed all that. My understanding is what I just told. What they told me was it was based on this comic book character who for 60 years was known as Captain Marvel and then was renamed Shazam for this franchise. Now, Zachary Levi, who was the Chuck in Chuck, and it was is in the second season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Terrific actor. Mm-hmm. He plays the grown-up Shazam, and he's perfect for it because he's a great-looking guy. He's like 6'4", you know, muscular and all that stuff. Right. But he's got that sense of humor, so he could play a kid, you know, like a kid at heart and also a kid. Mm-hmm. So he's terrific in there. A lot of neat little messages about family and sticking up for each other and, you know, about bullying and how to combat it. And then they just have a lot of fun with the superhero thing. There's one point where he's up in the sky and the bad guy, the evil doctor bad guy, is up in the sky too, about a mile away. Mm-hmm. You know, they're always up there. And every time the evil guy says something, he goes, "I can't hear you. You're like a mile away. I don't know what you're saying to me." And the guy's going, "I will destroy you, Shazam, and I will kill your family."
This is connected because there was the same sort of thing in the 1970s TV thing.
Oh, then I'm wrong. Then there was some other Shazam before.
Yeah.
I was told, and I will have to go back and look at my press. I was told that this is a 5-year-old franchise.
I just want to know.
A first movie. But clearly, the TV show is out there, so they must have thought they were losing the rights. I don't know. We're getting bogged down.
This is
a movie that I'm reviewing. I don't know anything about the TV.
Is there an older guy in a van who often will say to him, "Would you like my beer nuts?"
No.
There's not that. That doesn't happen?
Really?
No.
No, that happened in the 70s TV
maybe
show.
In the second movie there will be.
So
I don't know.
What were you giving this movie?
3.5 stars.
3.5 stars.
For this movie. Right. This movie right here.
No, we
this,
like that.
This movie.
All right.
Called
Shazam. Yeah, we get it.
Because I'm lost now. I'm going to go back and watch that TV show.
Oh, my. It's so bad. That TV show is, really, I'll bet it's on YouTube, is the single worst TV. It was on CBS on Saturday mornings.
Did he hang out with He-Man and She-Ra?
No, it was ISIS. And sometimes they would be on the same show. But it was one week it would be good. ISIS, and the other week it would be Shazam.
Oh.
That was very weird.
I loved ISIS.
Yeah.
ISIS, I did too.
See, now that's a soundbite we're never going to isolate right there. Out of love.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you. The Trump administration would like to see you in the office. They've just arrived. All right. Thank you very much, Richard Roper.
Let's check in tomorrow.
We've got, yes, you will, at the White Sox, and then post-White Sox action tomorrow right here on 720 WGN with this, the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. We've got Kim Gordon's news. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right. Now, this story that has developed over the last couple of days in Aurora, I think, has it's reignited an interest in a decades-old story from Chicago that is one of the bloodiest and creepiest murder sprees ever in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And and what's interesting is it kind of reintroduces this story that even in the 1980s, because it happened right after the Dahmer case, and then in the shadows, the arrests were made in the shadows of the ongoing Tylenol investigation, it didn't get the kind of attention that it probably would have gotten now, without question. Chrissy Gutowski from the Tribune has been following this story now for the last, crazy number of years, right? Is that correct?
I'm not quite old enough to have been a reporter in
I understand
early
1980s,
but probably since the late 90s, I've been on it for some of the appeals, and of course the clemency hearing is when I first met several families of the Ripper Crew's victims.
So the Ripper Crew was four guys.
Correct.
And two brothers, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The Cucurellis brothers. And they were the I guess, is it the elder brother that, or I don't know which one's older than which, but one of the brothers was executed, last human executed by the state of Illinois in 1999, right?
Exactly 20 years ago, last month, yep.
And he was executed for these crimes, for the conviction of these crimes. And his brother, it has now been released, and explain how that happened, because there were as many as 17 murders related to this, right?
Correct. There's some mysteries about this horrible sexual sadistic killing spree of these four men, and one of them is just how many victims they did. But the authorities have placed it at about 17, and then a man as well, one man and 17 women. And Tommy Cocarellis, the three were arrested in late 1982, and Tommy was not arrested until a few months later. He basically walked up to a couple of the cops who were canvassing his neighborhood in Villa Park. The Cocarellis boys were from Villa Park in DuPage, and said, hey, I heard you got my brother. What's going on? So they began interviewing him, and he confessed to being present at a few of them.
So he wait, I want to go back through this.
Yeah.
So his brother had already been scooped up by the police,
yep,
along with these two other guys, including one who was said to be sort of the ringleader of this.
Robin Gedd.
Right, yeah. And then,
who was married with three children and had some sort of a satanic cult-worshipping place, altar in his attic or somewhere in his house.
He was the Chicago connection, yeah, and he worked for John Wayne Gacy, which is confirmed. Gacy was listed on a witness list in a DuPage County court file that went through. So at some point he worked for Gacy, so this case is
That's
crazy
amazing.
Connections.
It's amazing that would be. So this guy is, and we'll get to Robin Gedd in a second, because I think it kind of all starts with him.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a Spitzer guy?
Eddie Spitzer.
Yeah. Spitzer, and what did, and how did all these guys know each other? Obviously, the brothers knew each other, but how did they...
Sure. Let me answer your first question, though. So the reason why Tommy Cocarellis got out is a DuPage County jury convicted him, and he got natural life. But a First District Appellate Court reversed it in 86, setting, like, legal errors. Basically, he confessed to a few of them, but his brother and Eddie Spitzer also confessed and did not implicate him. And his defense attorney wanted those confessions to come in, showing that he didn't implicate him, and the judge ruled it was hearsay, so didn't allow it at his trial. And the higher court ruled that that was a reversible error. So he got a new trial, and on the eve of the trial, he decided to plead guilty instead of going to trial, and they gave him a 70-year sentence. And that was before truth in sentencing. So convicted murderers back in the day could get day-for-day good credit behind bars. In the early 90s, they switched that, and murderers no longer get good credit. So that's how he got out.
He was a good boy
behind bars.
50%, 36 years. And
correct.
Yep. He's out. He's a low IQ individual, is the way he's been described. Is that
75 was what he tested, which at the time they said was about higher than 4% of the nation's population, borderline mentally impaired.
Mm.
Which might explain why he went up to the police and said, "You've got my brother. What's going on with that?" And then the police grab him up, and this again is in, this would be early 1983, right, when they arrested him.
Yeah, like November 82. So
okay.
Right in that all time right. period where all those crazy crimes are going on that you mentioned.
Right, and this when they were grabbing these guys up. And the thing is that I think that police at that point, from these murders started in 1981. Right.
That was 17-month crime spree. They believe the earliest victim was May of 81.
So from 1981 to 1982, you had these, and police were not necessarily connecting all of them, right?
It was strange because the women who they targeted didn't seem to have a lot of interconnectivity. They were different races, different professions. They were found in different places. They were picked up in the middle of the day. They were all kinds of neighborhoods, suburbs. Everywhere.
Right. There was no rhyme or reason.
The one thing was that they were alone, right? The women were alone.
They were alone, and they were targeting women who worked as prostitutes and minorities in the city in the beginning, and then they just began scooping up any sort of crime of opportunity, any lone woman walking down the street, day, night, city, suburbs. There was no rhyme or reason, and it was...
And the bodies would be found in a mutilated state. Right, and they had been sexually assaulted, the bodies mutilated, and mutilated along that sort of sexual line as well.
Very sexually sadistic and cruel, and oftentimes they mutilated. It was part of like a satanic ritual that they did, as Anna mentioned, in the ringleader's home later with the body parts. But normally they mutilated them sexually and believed when some of the victims were alive.
So he protested his innocence, Robin Gedd, in some famous letter that he wrote to a reporter. I mean, there had to be a ton of DNA evidence and a ton of evidence if they were involved in this kind of a crime. Is that right? Should we assume that?
So there really wasn't physical evidence against these guys at the time. This was right before DNA. You know, we know DNA was around for, like, Jeanine Nicarico a few years later. But this was, like, right before it. And it was just old-fashioned, you know, shoe leather, gum shoe reporting. Mm-hmm. And it was confessions. Gad, shockingly, as the ringleader, is the only one who was not convicted of a murder. He's the only one who didn't confess. So he's in until he's like 89, 2042, he gets out, if he lives that long, for attacking an 18-year-old woman who survived and identified him.
Oh,
that's how the whole thing unraveled, right? It was this one case of him, and it's a grievous attack. I mean, when you read the details of what he did to this woman, it is crazy. And he left her thinking she was going to die, right? Is that what we can assume?
Right. Because she's never talked publicly except for at his trial, and they tried to get her to talk in the clemency hearings. And a DuPage County prosecutor, who's a good source, called her and asked her, would you appear before the Prison Review Board? And he was told, you'll never know how much this phone call upset me. Don't call here again. Still just can't talk about it.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, based on what the criminal report is, you can sort of understand it. She, like many of these victims, I mean, these guys were literally focusing on the sexual organs as a mutilation point. And again, as you pointed out, while these women were still alive. And I think the bodies, now this is the interesting piece of this, is that they would... and one of the reasons that they were having trouble tracking, because some of it was in DuPage County, some of it was in Cook County, some of it was in the city of Chicago, some of it was in the suburbs of Cook County. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, this is another era, and this is right on the verge of those kinds of things being data coordinated, were not.
Yeah.
So you had different police agencies looking at things and not necessarily coordinating this you know, practice modus operandi. And the two of the bodies were disposed of in Chicago, one at Division and Lakeshore Drive, right?
One of them was a Broadview woman, I think you're talking about.
Advertising executive,
like,
or something.
Yeah, I mean, she was at an appointment. In
middle of the day kind of thing, broad daylight.
Yeah, walking back to her car, and they just grabbed her. And that, when it happened, like in the Gold Coast community and in the heart of downtown and suburbs, that's when people started taking a little more note.
Right.
And in broad daylight.
A retired police officer who I reached out to, who was on that case, and he remembers it well, based on basically the brutality of it, and, you know, at the time, that was just, it was something that stood out in their minds and still haunts him to this day.
And I think, as anyone who knows this case, I grew up in the Chicago area, it affected, like, when I walk to my car, you know, Lori Borowski was abducted broad daylight in a shopping center walking to work on a spring Saturday morning. I think women know from this case, always be conscious if you see, especially vans. I never park near vans with those sliding doors.
I'm like that too.
Yeah. I mean, it really awoke a consciousness, as many of these cases do in all of us in the area.
So let's get to where we stand now today. All right, so you've got this horrifying, up to 17 victims. The details, some of them have emerged in the reporting, your reporting in the Tribune, Christy, but also in other stories around this. And today, in researching this, we talked to a number of different attorneys who are involved in this, people at Cook County State's Attorney's Office and other people.
Yep, some are around still.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, we just had a lawyer in a totally different story who said, yeah, I was on felony review for that. Four people I've talked to independently today have all said, oh my God, you're not going to believe how sick this was, because they went through, and I think a lot of people were also in a different era of the state attorney's office where you'd go and could read other people's cases. Now that's frowned upon now, and there's a data track to it. But these guys were getting the case files on it because they couldn't believe what these four guys were doing to these women. I mean, it is horrifying. I mean, it's the worst. It's the worst nightmarish thing you can imagine if you're a woman. And there's a sense now, as this Cocorella's brother has been returned to society, when the details of that are out, that's why you're getting protests in Aurora.
And we'll never exactly know his involvement. He admitted to being present, but not taking part in the rapes or the murders of any of the women, but he admitted to being present to three of them. And then he later changed his story at trial and said that the details were fed to him by these detectives. But I will tell you, some of the detectives on the case, it doesn't hold water with me, because one was John Milner, who became the Elmhurst police chief and a longtime state senator. And another was John Sam, who was a bit of a hero in the Nicarico saga. Mm-hmm. Shortly later, quit his job in protest because he was unhappy with the Rolando Cruz arrest. And, mm-hmm. and you know, he is held out in amongst organizations that do wrongful convictions and exonerations as a good cop. So I just, that doesn't hold water to me. Mm-hmm. And the cops say if we did, he wasn't bright enough to have remembered everything. So
right, they were trying to talk him into something, to talk him into a confession.
Right, yeah. But he does appear to be, out of them, the one that may have been the least most involved. It was interesting, though, I found a juror from his 84 trial, I think it was, in DuPage, and she was kind of in charge of the evidence, and she told me that, like, he admitted in his confession to opening the door of a hotel room where one of the women was taken. So, to her, that's culpability. You did nothing. You're just as guilty as the others. Yeah.
Christy, hold on 1 second. Christy Gutowski is with us from the Chicago Tribune. We'll talk more about this and also get the reaction from what's going on in Aurora, as people are outraged by the fact that this guy involved in these murders, it, you know, at whatever level, but still involved in the murders, and the brother of a guy who's executed for the murders is now free and is living in a religious kind of halfway house kind of situation in Aurora, and we'll explain exactly what that's all about on the other side. But first, Kim, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Roe devastated again, that from the family of Timothy Pitson, after hearing the Aurora boy wasn't found after all.
Bro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. There's a story here in Chicago that is just now capturing national attention because of the way it has developed over the last couple of days. And it's an old story. It goes back to the 1980s, early 1980s, 81 and 82. Yeah. Series of murders here. It was the Ripper Crew was who they were, was how police referred to them when they were mm-hmm. making the arrests. And it was four guys that that lived. One of them lived in Chicago, and then the others were in the suburbs. And they were traveling throughout the Chicago metropolitan area. And this is one of the reasons that it took so long to detect them. Because back in that era, there wasn't really that connection, because they were working DuPage County and Cook County, the city of Chicago, and the suburbs. And they were abducting women in a van, sexually mutilating them, leaving their bodies, in some cases, you know, in alleyways, another time thrown off a bridge, the bridge over the Chicago River at Fullerton.
Yeah.
And these bodies were mutilated in such a way that these guys were then taking body parts as tokens back to a satanic altar at one of the guy's houses, in the guy who lived in Chicago at his house, and doing unspeakable things there as well. And it's a house of horrors story.
It is.
And one of the people in this was executed. He was the last person executed in the state of Illinois in 1999.
Another one was commuted to life by Governor Ryan when he was on death row, was sentenced to death.
And then another is going to, is maybe released when he's 89 years old. That's 2042. He's still got 23 years left before that happens. But the fourth person in this case has been released. And now he is living in Aurora. And he just arrived there in the last couple of days. Christy Gutowski has been covering this story for a long time for the Chicago Tribune, and she joins us right now. She's been here telling us a story. And Dr. Matt Harrington lives in Aurora, and he is mounting a protest against this person coming to. Thomas Cocorales is his name, being able to live in this kind of a halfway house kind of facility, a religious organization doing a halfway house kind of facility. And I'm not quite sure they're saying, if you read what they're the statement of this particular organization, Wayside Cross Ministries, is that what they're doing is God's work. You know, this is a person who wants to turn his life around. They can help him turn his life around. He's paid his debt to society, so just leave him alone. And Dr. Harrington, you look at this differently.
Oh, yes. Thank you for having me on this evening. I really appreciate it because this story needs to get out even more because it's relative. This person, as you know, went around with a satanic cult, kidnapped, then used an ice pick on a lot of their victims, up to 80 punctures in a person. They severed their left breast to use in a satanic cult, killed them, and then raped them. Right? Let's repeat that. Killed them. And then rape them. These people are animals. It's not just when, but he's going to do this again if out. And Aurora got, the mayor says, was blindsided by having this person here. Well, that's a total canard. Because the mayor knew that this guy was coming here, and that's why he was on vacation. And then he got called out on it because we found out. And we're starting this protest tomorrow at 11 o'clock at Wayside Ministries. And we'll then march from Wayside Ministries to City Hall to make sure that they know that we don't want this rapist and murderer here, endangering our community. Because once he's passed their 30-day wait period, he's able to walk out at any time of that halfway house and go find a job or just smell the flowers. Well, we have a nice river path that goes from Aurora all the way up to St. Charles and down to Montgomery. That whole community is in danger by this guy. And let's not forget, these people were working with John Wayne Gacy because the van was John Wayne Gacy's van.
That's actually not accurate. But one of the guys in this, Robin Gecht, was an electrician who did work on projects with John Wayne Gacy. We know that's confirmed.
Right.
But the van is not his. But there are... I mean, this is an issue when people are returned to the community after, you know, being criminals. Does this organization, this Christian organization, do they have a right to try to rehabilitate him? He's paid his debt to society, theoretically.
Well, no, he actually didn't pay his debt. He was supposed to be in there for 75 years, and the Greek Orthodox Church came in and had his sentence reduced by 40 years.
That's not true either.
He served 50% of his time because there was no truth in sentencing at that time. He was sentenced to 70 years, and so he served 50%, which is what most anybody who was sentenced at that time did.
But, all right, so, okay. So the protest, though, what do you, if this organization doesn't change what they're going to do, what is your plan?
Well, our plan is to also force an ordinance through the city here, which we've been trying to push for several years, of electronic monitoring of all violent sexual predators that come into our area. I mean, if we could do it for DUI people, we could do it for the most heinous, and recidivism is the highest on sexual predators, over 60% nationally, that they will commit the crime again.
All right.
So we have to start using technology for our benefit, because it has a small community of 209,000 people, with a police force, really, that only have about 36 officers that on the street at any one shift. And right now, we're down 4% of our police officers because of the Henry Platt shooting. We need to start looking forward and being more progressive proactive versus and always saying, oh, we didn't know. Oh, we're going to trust this person, because that doesn't work.
All right. Matt, thank you very much. Appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Christy, want a couple clarifications here, obviously. I think we did them in real time. But obviously there's a lot of emotion here, and this is an era in which emotion and sometimes things that are not 100% true get played out in these. But it's still, you can understand what's going on in this town, which is that this is a very scary time, because when you stop and you take this in sum total, what these four guys did, and it's very unclear who did what when in this whole process, right, between these four guys. It does appear that this particular guy, the lowest IQ guy, and, you know, may have only been present for some of this as opposed to all 17, but it's still, he's been convicted of a murder.
Correct. He's pled guilty to it. He was convicted, then it got reversed, and he did plead guilty to it. It was interesting. We've been reporting about he was originally supposed to get out in September of 2017, mm-hmm. but he had no place to go. And because he's not a registered sex offender, people keep saying that, but he is a convicted murderer who is committed a sexually motivated murder. So he has to, under an Illinois state law, register on the sex offender registry. But that's all he has to do. He can live within 500 feet of a school or a park or a daycare. So he had 3 days to stay where he was going. He was released from a prison in West Central Illinois on Friday.
Near Galesburg, right?
Yeah, he told them he was going to Wheaton. Mm-hmm. So that was what was reported Friday and Saturday. And even the state police website said Wheaton homeless on Saturday, and then Sunday morning he walked into the Aurora Police Department and registered with Wayside, which is a wonderful ministry that does great work in Aurora. But obviously people did feel blindsided and are very fearful.
So the mayor was probably truly blindsided. We just heard from Matt that maybe not, but like everyone else, thought he was going to Wheaton.
Everyone thought he was going to Wheaton. Wheaton put out a press release on Saturday saying, we haven't heard from him. And people in Wheaton were, you know, there's these Facebook mom pages and stuff. People were lit up. So, it was a shock to people when he ended up in Aurora.
He's given an interview with someone who's in the Tribune family of newspapers and said, I just want to be left alone. I'm not a risk. I don't have any plans. I don't want anybody to, I just don't want to have any contact with victims or anybody else. I just want to go on with God and go on with my life.
Correct. So he's 58 years old, and we know because he received day-for-day credit that he stayed out of trouble in prison these past 35 years. We know that he's done some ministry in prison, but we don't know, for example, if he's still claiming innocence or if he has admitted to his part and showed any sort of remorse. Mm-hmm. We know he did not have a violent history before this happened, but he admitted he had a rough life. His mom died when he was 17 in his arms. His father was a cook and worked many jobs to support the family, big family, and we know that he was special ed, dropped out of high school pretty early, and he got involved in, I think it was cocaine that he admitted, according to the court files.
Well, it's interesting because his brother seems to have been the lead bad guy in all
of
this.
Yes, Andrew Coccarellis.
And was executed. Right, last person to be executed in the state of Illinois, but that doesn't. I mean, I don't. If I lived in that community, I wouldn't feel any better about that. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, he's admitted to being a part of this group. He knows what they were doing,
right?
And they, it's even 36 years later. I would not. Phil Barry's 58 years old. He's still,
And I think his point about I don't want any contact with the families came from some the Lori Ann Borowski's family had a press conference last week, and they had Gloria Allred came in from Los Angeles, and they want to propose some, you know, amendment to the
like
sex offender.
Right?
Yeah, about
what would that do?
No, well, I don't know how well thought out it is, frankly, since he's not a registered convicted sex offender, but a no contact order they want in place for any victim's families.
And the only reason he's not a convicted sex offender is because all of the legal machinations that happened.
Correct.
Because of he was originally tried. He was tried with his brother on a single jury, right? Wasn't that the case?
He was convicted of a rape, though, but that got reversed, and then just to make for the plea deal, they just he just pled guilty to straight murder, not the rape part.
Got it.
But
all right.
Law changed later.
Right. And you're getting caught in that niche where law, technology, all those things changed between the late 1970s and the mid 1980s. And it was a totally different world after that. So he's been the beneficiary of the day for day and the beneficiary of a review. And then there wasn't enough DNA to be able, there was no DNA at that point used in these cases. So there are a lot of happenstance things that have occurred here that have now allowed Thomas Coccarellis to be free at the age of 58, and the community is we find ourselves in this moment where community is scared and as you heard from Matt Arrington, outraged.
Mm-hmm. And there's family members who live nearby. I mean, Lori Ann Borowski's mother said, I would never imagined in my lifetime that he would get out.
All right. Thank you, Christy Kotowski from the Chicago Tribune. Appreciate you being with us for the last hour talking about this. Let's check in with Andre Darlis. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Well, Roe, Jussie Smollett isn't paying, but the city of Chicago isn't giving up just yet. That's coming up at 7:00.